You're listening to Fakeologist Radio Conference Call, another Fakeologist service to connect like-minded skeptics who want to share their ideas with like-minded individuals. Unlike audio chat, all you need is a telephone, whether it be a hard line or a soft line like Skype. Go to fakeologist.com/CC and learn how to participate or start a call. And hear it later on fakeologist.com. To comment on this call, find the post at audiochat.fakeologist.com and scroll through the archives. Now, on with the call.
John, welcome to July 22, 2022, an occult number, 2015. Reporting from Toronto. And you are reporting from where in California again?
Right this very minute, I'm in Fullerton, California, but soon to be somewhere else.
Fullerton is a suburb of somewhere? Where's Fullerton? It's too small for me to know where it is without my Google Map.
Fullerton is probably about 20 or so miles outside of Los Angeles. It's in Orange County. But it's one of the last cities right before the L.A. County line.
All right. Well, since it's my show and you're a guest, why don't you fill me in on what you've been doing at hoaxbusterscall.com?
Well, let's see. We just posted something up today about... We did a first-time thing where we're going to start doing these things called Hoaxbusters Call Special Reports.
Okay. And what are you specially reporting on today?
Today we specially reported on what we called it Weird Scenes Inside the Kitchen. And it's all about strange backgrounds of celebrity chefs.
Okay.
And so folks want to go check that out. You might find that interesting to note that Julia Child was in the OSS and Martha Stewart takes horse and carriage rides with David Rockefeller, and that the barefoot Contessa Ina Garten used to work in the Ford and Carter administrations, and her husband currently sits on the board of 10 corporations and also runs a think tank in Washington, D.C., while simultaneously is a professor at Yale teaching things on globalization. So there's all sorts of weird stuff. You'd have to go listen to it, and the angle that Chris and I kind of take in it is that this actually isn't too far outside of the realm of possibility, because food would be one thing you would definitely factor into, something that that people in power would want to control.
Yeah.
And even the ideas that a culture may have about its food might be something to consider. And one of the points I brought up in the talk with Chris is that if you go read anthropology books, and, you know, they're doing these overviews of other cultures somewhere else besides the U.S. or Western countries, one of the main focuses is always food.
And, I love food.
Yeah. Food is something...
Keeps me going.
Exactly. And we may even take for granted how controlled we are by food, and not just I brought this up on the call as well. There's the famous quotes, by I can't remember the lady's name from the United Nations, and Henry Kissinger alluded to the same thing, that food is to be used as a weapon.
Oh yeah, well that's the best way to move people.
Yeah, and I think
that's how the British got rid of the Irish.
That's correct, absolutely. And then they all came over here, and I am a product of that.
Me too. Me too, and I learned about how the potato famine wasn't, there was no real blight of the potato. It was the British loading all the potatoes onto a ship and sinking it. You call that a famine, I guess. Well, it's kind of unnatural, and it was just a military strategy.
Absolutely. That's kind of the way I think those people are talking about food as being weaponized, like, you know, the ebb and flow of food production. But we never really think about food in the context of how food might be controlled culturally and, you know, through taste and just the way that you learn about, you know, things having to do with food, the way that we now currently a lot of people eat is all based around prepackaged food and that type of stuff. And Chris made a great point that that actually comes out of the military. The idea of prepackaged food is a military idea.
Yeah.
And it all kind of happened around the same time that, you know, in the 1950s is when the mass consumerism started to come in artificially, of course.
The supermarket. Yeah. The supermarket was the 50s invention, right?
Yeah, you of course had markets, but yeah, the idea of the supermarket, meaning the huge, vast place that you would go to get everything. You used to have to go to all sorts of different markets to get fruit.
You went to the bakery, you went to the meat, the butcher. I still do a little bit of that, I think, in Europe, although I haven't been to Europe, so I don't know, but these are... That's the way I think they do it, but of course it's so much more convenient all under one roof. Yeah, I had a comment. I had two comments because I was listening to your Pierce Redmond interview.
Uh-huh.
And I thought it was great that you brought him back even though you say you disagreed. I don't remember the disagreement. My first comment was actually an email to you and Chris is that the audio file was corrupt, at least on my end. And when he resent it to me, it was still corrupt. And that was that it showed us 700 minutes, which meant I couldn't... Basically, if I stopped the audio, it would lose its place and not be able to restart. So that has to be remastered somehow because I only got halfway through.
All right. I'll let him know that's something on
that happens. Yeah, that happens once in a while with his files. I don't know what software he uses to render his audio, but it happens once in a while that he usually fixes it.
Okay, I'll let him know that it did not get fixed, and...
So I only heard the first half, and I can't remember if you were discussing on that show or the other audio that you re-emphasized to me, the Tom Secker clandestine radio, which I do subscribe to, but didn't get around to listening to it until you pointed it out. And that was, I think he did a FOIA and got a document how the CIA was involved, had their little sticky fingers in all movies and most television shows or many or most.
Yeah, it was the Department of Defense.
Yeah, the Department of Defense, that's right, which and all its branches of the military and all the intelligence branches within them.
Right, and I actually point out on the Weird Scenes Inside the Kitchen special report, that two of those shows, which is pretty funny, is one of them is Master Chef and the other one is Cupcake Wars. The Department of Defense funds two shows on the Food Network. So
how is it listed on the credits? The Air Force
What he couldn't find out was what it was that they were implementing into the shows or, you know, censoring. That information was not given. But it's just basically like a vague thing. Oh yeah, we fund in one way or another without any description. We fund these shows, and so it's got a list.
So maybe they have a fake name as the executive producer, which is really one of the many covers in between middlemen, between the show and the DOD?
Yeah, or it could be like when Gore Vidal was on CNN that one time. I don't know if you ever saw that clip of Gore Vidal when he's getting interviewed on CNN, and he's talking about how he's saying to the I can't even remember, it's been so long since I've seen that, but he's talking to the commenter and he says, "Oh, it's nice to see that there's not a general off to the side telling you what you can and can't say on the interview."
Yeah.
And he talked about that, how when he would do interviews at CNN that there'd be army generals walking around the place in uniform.
Well, that would seem just a little bit too obvious to me, but
yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's just a joke. But insidiously, they're somehow working their way into the script. And I, now that I watched a little bit of television, I revisited an old show I used to watch before I got involved in all the media fakery, and that was called Undercover Boss. Have you heard of that show?
No, I have not.
Okay, it's called Undercover Boss. Essentially, the premise is the president of a big company goes and pretends to be a bottom-of-the-pyramid employee to see how the business works, and try and figure out what the employees and the customers think of his company, since he's too high up in the ivory tower to be able to figure it out. So I watch one of these episodes because sometimes I have to take a break from all the research that we do. And injected in the show, and I did this post at fakeologist.com, one of the sad sack employees who works for probably less than minimum wage was recounting his sad story to evoke sympathy, because emotion is the name of the game when you're trying to do these shows. It's all about the emotions. And he injected a line that was so out of place, such a non sequitur, so unbelievable, I almost fell off the bed. And that was that his mother was in one of the Twin Towers on 9/11. I could not believe what I was hearing, because it's already been 12 or 13 years from that event to when the show aired, and it just made no sense how they could possibly have brought that up and incorporated it into the show. But now that you and Tom and Pierce brought up how the DOD is involved in even the most unobvious, that's not the right word, but the most
The least
offensive shows, like Cupcake Wars or even Undercover Boss, now it makes sense. It makes sense now that they would put a psychological operation line into such an innocuous show just to help reinforce the myth.
Absolutely.
So now it makes sense. Finally, that's a really great explanation. So now I can understand it. It's really created a full circle for me.
Yeah, that's good. I'm glad you had a revelation there from the information. Another interesting thing, I'll give you another one, too, that we talk about at the end of the Weird Scenes Inside the Kitchen special report. There was a movie that came out in 2007 called Julie and Julia. Are you aware of that movie?
No. Julie and Julia, is that Raul Julia or something? Raul?
No. No, it's a movie about Julia Child.
Okay, so. I knew there was a movie about her, okay. But I didn't watch it. Okay.
Okay.
What was it about?
So anyways, this movie is a true story, you know, and it's half a story based on Julia Child's biography of her life in France. But it's also half based on this lady who did this blog, like, way back, I don't know how many years ago, but where she went and she did a blog about how she cooked all of Julia Child's recipes that were in her cookbook, right?
Okay.
So her name is Julie Powell.
Okay.
Well, it's funny because, and I mentioned that you, like, last week had reposted that thing that Chris and Marcus had talked about one time, and that was the 350 celebrities who were supposed to apply on 9/11 but didn't.
Yeah, I think I did post it before, but I couldn't find it, so I just reposted it.
Yeah, so one of those celebrities was Julia Child.
Oh, good.
And okay. So that's kind of what got me off on this jag with the celebrity chefs, because I knew that because my wife had read Julia Child's biography and it's laying around the house, I just knew that she was in the OSS at one time, right?
Right.
So I thought that was strange. I'm like, oh, here you got someone who is former intelligence lending their name to an obvious psyop, right?
Right. Yeah.
So I thought that was interesting, and I remember even emailing that to Chris, last year sometime. But here was another thing. That movie about this Julie Powell, lady connecting it in with the Julia Child, biography has another 9/11 tie-in. And Julie Powell's day job when she's not blogging about Julia Child at this particular moment in time was she worked for the Lower Manhattan Development Corporation and took phone calls from the victims' family members all day long.
Jesus. Wow. Oh, boy. It never ends. It's a small group, isn't it, really, that is all mixed up with this baloney?
Yeah, so when you watch the movie, which stars Meryl Streep as Julia Child, she actually does a really good job of playing Julia Child. And then Amy Adams, no relation to me. Amy Adams plays the Julie Powell character. There's actually a scene in the movie where she's sitting there talking to some irate person on the other end of the phone at her job. And that's what she did all day, is took phone calls from victims, family members, and people who were upset about what happened on 9/11, and venting their frustration to people in cubicles at Larry Silverstein's Lower Manhattan Development Corporation.
That's amazing. That really is amazing. But not surprising at all.
Yeah, I thought you'd like that.
I wanted to bring up one more point that sprung to mind, and you're talking about Scientology with Pierce, and I found that interesting because I did enjoy the movie Going Clear. I like that kind of stuff. I like
One thing before you get into it, Tim, is I wanted to tell you that the thing that Pierce and I and Chris disagree on, and that we also disagree on with Tom Secker, is that they literally don't believe in media fakery at all.
Okay. They don't believe in psychological operations or hoaxes?
It just appears from what I've seen that they don't believe it. They totally discount the idea that there's crisis actors or that people don't die at these events. And that's what it is.
Oh, can you hold on one sec, John? Just one sec.
Sure.
Sorry about that, John. Okay, well, you know, you can maybe ease Tom, or is Pierce also not on board with the media fakery?
Yeah, that's what him and Chris were discussing on the first call that they did together, to a certain extent. And they didn't, he had some interesting answers. Like I said, I'm not, I think he's a nice guy, and he's good on a lot of other subjects. On that particular subject, that's what we were talking about in the beginning portion of the interview, and I have no problem, like, saying on something else like this, like, that I totally disagree with him. I think that there is media fakery. There are crisis actors. People aren't dying. It's completely and totally obvious to me, and I don't take a dogmatic approach to it either, where I just blanketly say, oh, nobody died at these events in every event, because I don't know that. I just kind of look at what I can see, and it just looks obvious, you know. And so unfortunately, when him and Chris talked the first time, he didn't give really any answers to me that I thought would convince me otherwise. We'll just say that. So
yeah, it's too bad. But
they still put out good info, and I'll tell you what, the funny thing is, and Chris even told him this the first time they talked, and I've even posted this before, is that it's funny because they post really good information, and the information that they put out actually reinforces the idea that there's fakery going on. So,
well, hopefully one day you can just ask them directly, or maybe you already have, what part of, for instance, the September Clues concept they don't agree with and why. That would be great to find out the specific questions answered in that regard.
Yeah, I mean, whenever I listen to Tom Secker's podcast, which is part listening because he puts out good information sometimes, and then other times listening to hear him make fun of people who think that there's media fakery going on. So,
yeah, he has some really good British words for people he doesn't like
with bells with sausages on.
Yeah, I never heard of that before. It's kind of odd, funny, but
it's got to be British humor.
Yeah, there's a lot of British humor, and they're always on the cutting edge, we're told, so maybe it'll come over here eventually.
Yeah, I don't know. So,
I wanted to mention something about going clear in Scientology and why the CIA would be involved or be interested in these organizations. And it occurred to me that just as a regular person and a amateur broadcaster, that it's really hard to win over friends and influence people. And I don't think there's ever any danger of people like me broadcasting, because I'm sure I'm monitored enough and I'm off the radar because just not enough people listen. And it's very easy with the Internet to figure out how many people listen and are influenced. And because I don't influence people, I'm of no danger and I'm best ignored, as are probably 99% of everyone else that talks about what we talk about. Now, tying that into cult figures, cult leaders, tying that into musicians, popular movie stars, popular authors, those people, a lot of them, I would think, are organic, and they come up and aren't always promoted because I don't think you can force certain things that catch on. And they have some kind of qualities that I think that the intelligence agencies are interested in learning about, how they influence people and how they get a following. And I think that's probably why they like to maybe get involved and study and infiltrate these organizations, just to try and figure out how people can be so convinced by cult leaders, musicians, and authors.
Oh yeah, I definitely agree. I've seen evidence to the contrary. You know, a lot of the evidence to the contrary that everybody who's ever been a star is someone who's been bred and crafted from the ground up, right? I've seen evidence to the contrary through that in the music world, because I've known people who have gotten on major labels and who have had videos on, music television stations, that type of stuff, so on. So yes, I agree with you that that's what it is people with certain qualities, who are able to have influence, how to win friends and influence people. Who's that? Norman Vince Peale? Napoleon Hill? Can't remember. Dale Carnegie. I think it's Dale Carnegie.
Yeah, Dale Carnegie. I read the book.
Yeah. But yeah, that's how, that is definitely one way, because you see, there's people out there who have genuine quality to them, and then there's the people out there who have to pretend to be genuine. Right. And so I think that it's probably easier to get someone who's a genuine purpose. Like, perfect example, the way that you sell the idea of UNICEF, you know, United Nations International Education and Cultural Fund, you've heard of that?
Yeah, I think so. UNICEF, you mean the thing where you collect money on Halloween?
Right, that's the UNICEF stands for the United Nations International Educational and Cultural Fund, okay?
Okay.
Okay, so you see that on basically every soccer player has that on their jersey, right?
Okay.
All the soccer players have UNICEF all over the place. Actresses and actors, Selma Hayek is a big one who promotes UNICEF. That's how you get people to buy into a scam like that, is you've got these people who really are do-gooders. You know, sports players, for the most part, they're just sports players.
People with following. You need them.
Yeah, and especially soccer players, not so much here in North America, but soccer players worldwide in other...
Yeah.
Mexico, too, but not in Canada and the U.S., but soccer players are recognized all over the place. Right? And so, literally... Anytime I've ever seen a picture of a soccer player, no matter what jersey they're wearing, it's got the UNICEF logo on it.
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got these players, and that is a great vehicle, especially when another thing I talked about on the special report was Mario Batali, you know, being a chef, and his involvement in the David Lynch Foundation for Transcendental Meditation. Okay.
And so, once again,
you've got these other things out there with these stars and these people. They all get involved in these things, and they just think that they're doing something good, or you know, maybe they're doing it because it raises their profile, or maybe they do it because they make money off of it.
Right.
But whatever it is, it's probably, for the most part, on the lower levels, not because they're up to something nefarious or part of a New World Order plan or anything like that, but they have some element of creativeness that they've been chosen because of that element of creativeness that they and influence that they have. So, yes, I agree with you.
Yeah, okay. So, yeah, I thought the whole story that Pierce started, I don't know if he finished after I got cut off from the broadcast listening, about Scientology, about L. Ron Hubbard, and about the guy, David Miscavige, that basically did a bit of a coup to take over control. I just found the whole story really pretty interesting and fascinating, and trying to figure out why the CIA and the intelligence agencies would be interested in the whole cult.
One of the things that we all agreed on was that cults are petri dishes,
right?
And they're experimental, but also what they do is they provide a fall guy. They serve as a fall guy because, you see, you're involved in the cult of culture, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you think your life is normal. What you have is normal, and, you know, your involvement, your government is normal, your religion is normal, because Scientology is crazy.
It is to me.
Yeah, that's how you know what crazy is. You think, everybody else thinks, oh, well, what I do is normal. When I go to the mall and spend $500 on a pair of sunglasses, that's normal. Whatever it is that people believe is normal in their civilization, they've got these cults out there that provide them the reinforcement that what they're doing is normal, because, hey, they're not in a cult like Scientology, and they're not in a weird cult like, you know, some Mormon cult out in the middle of Utah where the guy has, like, 15 wives or something.
So, give me one sec, John.
Yeah, so it makes everybody else feel normal to have those abnormalities heightened. And I think that's one of the reasons, too, why you'll see a lot of that stuff on HBO. It's interesting because HBO used to have a show called Big Love, and it was actually a show about polygamist Mormons, and I thought it was I only saw one season of it, but I thought it was a real interesting show. I'm like, why would they even do a show about this? This is putting all of these putting all of this emotional drama, you know, into these characters, and you're going through the seasons, getting to like the personalities of these characters, and meanwhile in the background they have this strange abnormal life of where you know, this one man has like four or five wives. I can't remember how many, but it's trying to what the show was trying to do was trying to get you to look at that kind of lifestyle as being some sort of normality. But at the same time, it also offers you reinforcement that whatever you're doing isn't that really that weird, because you're not this weird polygamous Mormon living out in Utah with five wives. So yeah, I see that running through. I know HBO did that Going Clear documentary, which I have not seen as of yet, but hopefully will see sometime soon. But yeah, that's one of the reasons that I think that they have cults, and that why they promote cults, and why you've seen different elements of cults. I think cults are experimental. They're experimental in the ideas, but they're also experimental in the different ways that they can get people to believe in certain things as well. So, and if you go into the history, like we did on that talk of L. Ron Hubbard and Jack Parsons and what those guys were initially into, they are some strange, you know, they're strange Crowleyan Satanist types. And so yeah, they're into magic as well. They're into this ritual magic and into basically being con men as well, because they're involved with rocketry and quote-unquote science. And so, yeah, they're honing their skills at becoming ace con men. And con men generally end up in real good con men end up in the positions of power, because that's all that this stuff is, really. It's just a bunch of people conning you in multiple ways. There's just con job after con job, all the way down to the lowest level, to where you have the con man on the street asking for money at the freeway, and then he is the same guy. This literally happened to me, you know, not too long ago, where I was in a parking lot and some guy comes up to me and he asked me for money, and he said, "Oh man, hard times. I need to catch a bus back to L.A." I said, "Sure, here you go, have some." The next week, in the same parking lot, the same guy comes up and asks me the same thing, the exact same thing. "Oh man, I got hard times. Oh, the bus back to L.A." He said, "You know what? I just gave you money last week for the exact same thing." So, sorry, bud.
Two minutes, John.
Yeah, well, I'm going to be shoving off here in a minute, because I will be pulling into my driveway in about a second. So.
All right, John. All right, so I just arrived somewhere, so sorry to... Okay, this is a good time to end it then. Well, thanks very much for the chat, and we'll catch you next time.
Absolutely. You have a nice rest of the week.
All right. We'll be in touch. Take care. Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Hey, everybody. This is O'Hallahan from South Korea. And you're listening to Fakeologist Radio on Fakeologist.com.